so we understand each other, even as you claim to understand Thrawn.
Chixtus continued into the silence.
Go and rest now, Pathfinder. In a few hours, we'll reach the edge of the Ascendancy and enter into the Chaos, and your navigation skills will be required.
Yes, sir,
Kilori managed.
And who knows?
Chixtus added, the hidden eyes nevertheless somehow seeming to bore into Kilori's face.
If you're wrong about Thrawn, perhaps you will join the aliens of Sunrise in learning what it means to touch the beyond.
Chapter 23. A couple of days in hyperspace, and the Springhawk reached the Sunrise system. A quick in-system jump later, they'd arrived at the planet itself.
Full scan!
Simacro ordered, looking between the sensor display and the starscape outside the viewport. There shouldn't be much to see out there, he knew. A couple of Chiss warships, a couple of Pakian ones, maybe a transport or two if the Pakosh had managed to bring in additional forces. Chixtus and his Grisk fleet, at least, should still be well behind them.
Signal coming in, mid-captain,
Brisch called from the comm station.
It's the Vigilant.
Thank you,
Simacro said, keying the comm as the Vigilant's location came up on the display. The Night Dragon Man of War was in low orbit, directly ahead of the Springhawk, just about to disappear around the planetary rim.
This is mid-captain Simacro, aboard the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet Warship Springhawk,
he said formally.
This is Admiral Aralani.
Aralani's voice came back.
Welcome to Senior Captain Thrawn's last stand.
Simacro grunted.
Not really funny, Admiral.
Sorry.
Aralani apologized.
How did your mission go?
Simacro focused on Thalias, standing stiffly beside the navigator's seat. She hadn't said much about her meeting with Patriarch Thurfian since her hurried return from the Myth Homestead, and her insistent request that Simacro get the Springhawk into hyperspace as quickly as possible.
I'm told the contact went fine.
You're told? I thought you were the one handling that.
Thalias convinced me that she had a better chance of persuading one of the Aristocra to deliver our message to the Sindicure than I did.
And did she?
Aralani persisted.
Thalias?
Simacro invited. Thalias stirred.
I think so,
she said, which was about as much as Simacro had gotten out of her already. Apparently, she still wasn't going to offer more detail.
We'll know soon enough, he said. Where's everyone else?
Thrawn and Wingali are out at that asteroid cluster you passed on your way in,
Aralani said.
With all that clutter, it's fairly hard to see into, which would make it a perfect sniper nest. Thrawn thinks he has a better plan for it.
I'm not surprised, Simacro said dryly. What does Wingali think?
They're keeping this one very close to the table,
Aralani said.
If they come back with Wingali convinced, that would be your answer. Thrawn also has a group towing some of the asteroids of various sizes closer in toward the planet. The Pakian troop transport is still on the ground with the mages, clearing out one last pocket of Grisk slavers.
We ever get confirmation that's who they are?
Not really,
Aralani said.
They're just assuming Kilori's name for them was accurate. The Grey Strike's on the other side of the planet from you, along with 9 Pakian gunboats that arrived yesterday. Senior Captain Zainda is having a conference with all the commanders, and she left an invitation for you to join them if you got in before they finished.
We're on our way,
Simacro said, motioning the order to Asmodee.
How many of your old subordinates were you able to contact before you left the Ascendancy?
More than I expected, frankly,
Aralani said.
I talked to the patrol cruisers Parala and Bokria, and the light cruisers Whisperbird and Stingfly.
How do they sound? Simacro asked.
Receptive,
Aralani said.
I'm guessing the Syndicure's order kicking us off planetary defense duty was part of it. None of us joined the expansionary defense fleet to sit on our hands in orbit while some aristocrat explains what ungimbaled lasers we all are.
And Senior Captain Thrawn does have something of a reputation,
Simacro pointed out.
As a commander or an ungimbaled laser?
Aralani said.
Never mind. He probably has both. Speaking of reputations, we also have a surprise guest. Captain Ramos and the Klar family warship Orison caught up with us just as we were getting ready to leave Shisa and asked to come along.
Really?
Simacro said, frowning. Orison? Why did that name sound familiar?
Unnaturally generous of the Klar family, I must say.
I don't think family kindness had anything to do with it. That's the ship that nearly got taken out by the asteroid missile at Ornfra.
Oh, right,
Simacro said, as the name finally clicked. He'd read that report, but his attention had been focused on the weapon itself, plus the part the Greyshrike had played in neutralizing it.
I thought the captain's name was Roscoe.
It was,
Aralani said.
Ramis isn't saying much about it, but it sounds like their patriarch kicked Roscoe out of the command chair when she questioned his role in the current situation.
What role would that be?
That's another topic Ramis isn't talking much about. But I get the feeling that with the Klar Patriarch comfortably out of sight and earshot, he's unofficially returned command to Roscoe. Her stint in the expansionary defense fleet gave her a lot more combat experience than he has, and Ramis is smart enough to know that.
Right,
Simacro said, making a face. Once again, family politics running into military realities.
Well, I'm sure we're happy to have them aboard.
Saindar seems to think so,
Aralani said.
I need to go out to the asteroid cluster for a quick consultation with Thrawn. But I've told Saindar that you're on your way. She'll give you all the current thinking for our preliminary setup.
Sounds good, Simacro said. I'll see you later.
Will do. Aralani, out.
The comm went silent, and Simacro shifted his attention to the nav display. Asmodee had put the Springhawk on a vector that would skim them across the upper atmosphere behind the Vigilant and bring them around to where they could rendezvous with the Greyshrike and the other assembled ships. The estimated ETA, he noted, was 20 minutes.
Lieutenant Commander Asmodee, any way you can speed us up a bit?
I can dig us a little lower into the atmosphere if you'd like,
the pilot offered.
That would shave off a couple of minutes.
Do it, Simacro said. I've always hated being late to parties.
Yes, sir,
Asmodee said, throwing a quick grin over his shoulder at Simacro as he worked his board.
18 minutes to rendezvous.
Simacro nodded.
Thank you, he said. Thalias, you and Cheery might as well head back to the suite. Excellent job, Cheery, on getting us here.
Thank you,
Cheery said. Simacro frowned. There'd been something odd in her voice.
You all right?
He asked, standing up and crossing the bridge toward her. He was halfway there when the girl let out a scream. Simacro covered the rest of the distance in 3 long strides.
Cheery!
He demanded, breaking to a halt. Thalias had crouched down beside the chair and was staring up at the girl's face,
her expression rigid, her hands stiff where she gripped Chiri's arms. Taking another half step forward, Simakro leaned past her for a closer look of his own. One glance was all it took. Chiri's face was twisted almost beyond recognition. Her neck strained, her eyes wide and bulging as she stared at something light years beyond the Springhawk's viewport.
"Medic, to the bridge!" he snapped.
"No!"
Chiri said, her voice as unrecognizable as her face.
"Don't take her away!"
Simakro felt his blood turn to ice. He looked down at Thalias, saw the tension in the caregiver's face turn to horror.
"Chiri?" he asked. "Chiri!"
"Don't take her!"
the girl said in that same voice. "Who are you?" Thalias asked.
She shot a look up at Simakro.
"Are you the mages?"
"I need her,"
Chiri said.
"We all need her. An enemy is coming."
"We know that," Simakro said. "We'll be ready."
"You will not,"
Chiri said.
"The way is uncertain. Our futures are uncertain. Only together can we see the path."
"Magus, you're hurting her," Thalias said, clearly fighting to keep her voice even. "Whatever you're doing to Chiri, it's hurting her."
"I will not harm her,"
Chiri said.
"She and I will see the path. Only she and I together can see the path."
"You're already hurting her,"
Simakro said. A part of his mind was still refusing to accept what he was seeing and hearing. But it was real. It was horribly real. Chiri might be here in body, but she was speaking someone else's words, with someone else's voice. Already he could see her twisting into something he'd never seen before.
"The nightmares. Remember the nightmares you gave her? Those could have killed her."
"But they did not,"
Chiri said.
"Nor will this kill her."
"Mid-Captain Simakro is right," Thalias said. "Even if it doesn't kill her, it'll hurt her. It'll hurt and change her. She may never be whole again." Chiri shook her head. A brief and disjointed turn to the right and another to the left.
"She will not mind. She will accept being us."
"I don't believe you," Thalias bit out. "If she's really willing, release her and let her say that for herself."
"Release her?"
Chiri's lips curled in an almost smile, her mouth opening as if she wanted to laugh but couldn't quite remember how.
"Do you think I alone hold her? All those who now touch the beyond are gathered together for the protection of our world. All are in agreement. All will help us to find the path."
Simakro felt his lips curl back from his teeth in a snarl. So not only was the Magus invading Chiri's mind, but a whole damn planet's worth of dead people thought they could get in on this too?
"They will not approach her,"
Chiri said. Simakro frowned.
"What are you talking about?"
"They will not approach her."
Simakro looked at Thalias, got the same puzzled look in response. Behind him, the hatch opened. Simakro turned his head, saw two medics hurry onto the bridge.
"They will not approach her,"
Chiri repeated more sharply. Some Acro waved the medics back, cursing to himself. Even without the Magus's meddling, Chiri's third sight could see that far into the future. What would it be like when she'd fully taken control of the girl? "You can't do this to her, Magus," Thalia said. "You owe us. Remember? We saved your life and freed your planet from its conquerors."
"Triumphs that will turn to dust if all is ultimately lost,"
Chiri countered.
"Only if we can see the path can any remnant be saved."
Simacro looked down again at Thalius, his stomach tightening. How much of Thrawn's plan had the Magus already seen? Any of it? All of it? Was she even now glimpsing the scene of mass destruction Simacro knew was coming? "All right," Thalius said suddenly. Her face was pale, but her voice was firm. "We'll see the path together. But it won't be you and Chiri. You'll take me instead."
"You cannot see the path,"
Chiri scoffed. "No, actually I can," Thalius said. "I told you once before that I also had third sight."
"You had it once,"
Chiri said.
"But you long ago lost it."
"Not all of it," Thalius said doggedly. "I felt the presence of those in the beyond as we approached the system. I knew of the existence of the Guardian before Chiri told me of him." She looked up at Simacro. "And I know the Guardian would be displeased with you if you tore the life from a young girl." For a moment, Chiri didn't answer.
"Your third sight is gone,"
she said. "It's not gone. Merely dormant," Thalius said. "You and those in the beyond will just have to push a little harder to get it to work."
"Thalius, you can't do this," Simacro murmured. "You can't let her take you."
"If I don't, she'll take Chiri," Thalius said. "She already has her. This is the only way to persuade her to let go."
"But she's right," Simacro said. "Your third sight is long gone. It'll be like running a fire hose through you to get this to work."
"I don't care," Thalius said.
"Maybe I do."
"Well, you shouldn't," Thalius shot back. "You and the Springhawk can't do without Chiri. You can do without me."
"No," Simacro said firmly. "I'm not sacrificing your future either."
Thalius shook her head. "I don't have a future anymore, Mid-Captain," she said quietly. "I pulled a Charik on Patriarch Thurfian."
Simacro felt his eyes widen.
"You what?"
"I had to," Thalius said. "He let me leave Chila, but I know he won't forget." She shifted her eyes again to Chiri's face. "Argument over. Magus, I'm ready. Let her go and take me." Simacro looked into Thalius's eyes. And with that, he finally knew the truth. She was no spy. No matter what Thurfian had forced her to say, her loyalty was to Thrawn, to Chiri, and to the Springhawk. She would die before she would betray any of them. Which left him only one option.
"Just a minute, Magus," he called. "There's one more point you need to consider."
"What point is that?"
Chiri asked.
"You speak about the future," Simacro said. "The question you need to ask is whether or not you yourself have one."
"You speak a riddle."
"Then let me make it clear," Simacro said. "Mid-Commander Dalvu, are we within view of the Sunrise Nyx mine area?"
"Yes, Mid-Captain."
"Good," Simacro said. Senior Commander F. Priya. Prepare a spread of laser fire for that region.
McCaptain, what are you doing?
Thalias asked, her eyes going wide.
And prepare 2 breacher missiles as follow-up,
Simacro added.
Are you listening, Magus?
I am,
Chiri said.
Here are your choices, Simacro said. You release Chiri right now, and you leave her and Thalias strictly and completely alone. Otherwise, in 60 seconds, you and every one of the people within 10 kilometers of you dies.
The bridge, Simacro noted, had taken on a brittle silence.
Magus, did you hear me?
I heard,
Chiri said uncertainly.
You would never do such a thing. Your commander would never do such a thing.
Senior Captain Thrawn isn't here. I am.
He cares about Nonchis lives.
Yes, he does,
Simacro agreed.
You threaten his people and see how fast that changes. 45 seconds.
McCaptain, you can't do this,
Thalias pleaded.
I can and I will,
Simacro said coldly.
She threatened you and she's attacked Chiri. As far as I'm concerned, that's an automatic death sentence. 35 seconds.
Without me, you will die,
Chiri said, a strange sense of pleading in her voice.
Without seeing the path of battle, we will all die.
You underestimate Senior Captain Thrawn,
Simacro said.
He understands his enemies. He knows their patterns and their weaknesses, and what it'll take to defeat them. In fact, I'd wager he sees a battle's future even more clearly than you do. 20 seconds!
He counted out 5 more seconds. Then, abruptly, Chiri stiffened and collapsed in her seat, her breath coming in quick, shallow bursts. Silently, Simacro exhaled out his tension.
Secure lasers and breachers, he ordered. If you're still listening, Magus, you've made the right decision. Senior Captain Thrawn and I will continue to protect your world and your people to the best of our ability.
He lifted a finger.
Just remember that if you're tempted to change your mind, I haven't changed mine, and my order can always be reinstated.
He stood up, wincing at the sudden twinges in his knees.
Caregiver, do you need help getting her back to the suite?
No,
Thalia said, her face unnaturally pale as she also stood up, her hands still gripping Chiri's arms.
I can manage. Chiri?
I'm okay,
Chiri said. Her breathing had slowed, but she was unsteady as Thalias helped her to her feet.
Could I get something to eat?
Of course,
Thalias assured her, as she guided the girl around the chair and started maneuvering them toward the hatch. The 2 medics were still standing there. At a gesture from Simacro, they hurried forward to assist.
You can rest while I fix you something.
The medics reached them, taking Chiri's arms and continuing her path across the bridge. Thalias started to follow, hesitated, and turned back to Simacro.
Thank you, sir,
she said.
He shrugged. Just protecting the Springhawk's assets.
I thought we were real, live, socially valuable people,
she said, giving him a small, tired smile.
There's always some middle ground.
Yes.
Her smile faded.
Would you really have fired those lasers?
She asked, her voice almost too soft to hear.
He looked her straight in the eye. Would you really have fired that, Charik?
A muscle in her cheek twitched.
I need to see T'Chiri.
Yes, he said. Keep me advised about her condition.
She nodded and hurried after T'Chiri and the medics. The group disappeared through the hatch, and Simakro returned to his command chair.
We still on course for the Greyshrike?
He asked.
Yes, sir,
Asmordi said.
That was intense, sir.
Indeed it was, Simakro agreed. Let's hope the mages took the lesson to heart.
Mid-Captain, we have incoming, Dalvu said tightly. Multiple warships coming out of hyperspace.
Acknowledged, Mid-Commander,
Simakro said, eyeing the tactical, watching as the ship count slowly increased.
Lieutenant Commander Brisch, signal Senior Captain Thrawn. Tell him our guests have arrived.
Chapter 24.
Sunrise.
Kilori found himself running the name through his mind, back and forth, over and over, as the great presence guided him along the final leg of the long journey. It was the name Thrawn had coined for the planet, he'd been told, and Jixis had accepted it for a convenience of discussion. But surely the world's inhabitants had originally called it by another name. Had that name been something bright and glorious, reflecting a satisfying past and an optimistic future? Did those who still remained call it by a different name now that it had been shattered by war? Would they rename it yet again after witnessing the battle about to take place in the sky above their heads? Or would there even be anyone left there to remember or rename? Kilori had seen the horrific damage, the aftermath of a brutal civil war. According to Thrawn, that war had been instigated and encouraged by Jixtus and his Agbui agents. Once the Grisks had taken all they wanted from the world, would Jixtus then finish the job, destroying whatever was left? After all, the galaxy had a long history of ruthless destroyers who preferred not to leave witnesses behind. Would the people of Sunrise fall into that category? More important, would Kilori? Something in the distance ahead touched his mind. Another Pathfinder, deep within the Great Presence, approaching the world ahead. Probably Sarsh, he decided. The navigator whom he'd helped rescue from the hammer, only to then be forced into the service of Thrawn and the Pakosh. Unfortunate, probably even unfair, but at least his presence showed that Thrawn was definitely still at Sunrise. Or was he? Kilori's winglets twitched beneath his sensory deprivation headset. Sarsh was near Sunrise, but it almost seemed as if he was coming toward the Whetstone. Was Thrawn leaving the system then? He hoped not. Jixtus would be furious if the Chiss had finished his search ahead of schedule and was returning to the Ascendancy with his cargo of prescient aliens. Or was Thrawn instead somewhere beyond the planet and now returning to it? Kilori couldn't tell. The Great Presence could provide the location of another Pathfinder and a certain degree of identification. But distances and directions of movement were always tricky to estimate. And then, Sarsh vanished from Kilori's awareness. The surprise of it nearly jolted him out of his trance. But a second later, the other Pathfinder suddenly reappeared. Only now, he seemed to be going the opposite direction,
traveling back towards sunrise.
For another few seconds, he continued on. Then, once again, he disappeared. Had he dropped back out of hyperspace? That was the usual reason a Pathfinder's presence vanished. But if Thrawn was out in the vast nothingness between the stars, why would he suddenly choose to drop back into space normal?
There was no time to figure it out now. Jixtus had ordered the fleet to rendezvous at the far edge of the Sunrise system, beyond any chance of being detected from the inner system, and the Whetstone was fast approaching its destination.
Kilori made one final microscopic adjustment to the ship's direction, awaiting the guidance of the Great Presence.
And then, they were there.
He keyed the controls, and the Great Presence faded as the Whetstone once again returned to space normal.
Kilori reached up and slipped off his headset, blinking in the subdued bridge lights as he checked the nav displays. They were in the outer Sunrise system, just as he'd been ordered. His winglets smoothed with relief.
Whatever else happened, at least Jixtus couldn't add a navigational mistake to Kilori's list of failings.
He looked at the sensor display, mentally counting down the seconds. And then, suddenly, there they were, bursting into view all around him. The Fate Spinner, the three War Masters, and the 11 Battle Chiefs. All 15 arrived in perfect formation as their silent attendant navigators brought them back to space normal in rapid-fire succession.
Kilori had seen the attendant's exquisite coordination before, and he still didn't know whether they could sense one another in hyperspace the way Pathfinders could, or whether they simply had an incredible sense of position and timing. Jixtus was already on the comm, speaking with the other Grisk commanders in their own language. Off to one side, General Arias Nakir's skin was shifting around even more than usual in that unpleasant alien way of theirs. Anticipation or dread, Kilori didn't know which. Or perhaps it was frustration. Kilori hadn't had very much interaction with the Kilgis, but even so, he'd gotten the impression that General Arias Nakir had expected to be a major part of Jixtus's grand scheme. Instead, his role had apparently been merely to ferry Jixtus around the Ascendancy, looking innocent while Jixtus stirred up discord until he was ready to reveal the true invasion fleet. Apparently, the suggestion that the Kilgis were in fact Jixtus's masters had just been another of Thrawn's lies. Kilori had spent a lifetime of navigating aliens through the chaos, most of whom had treated him like the hired servant that he was. He'd seen Nakir's level of self-importance in many others, the most recent being General Yiv's Nicardoon and Hapleaf Sagbui. Both species had challenged the power of the Chiss Ascendancy, and both had broken against it. Maybe this time it would be the Chiss who would find themselves breaking before a greater force. Jixtus finished his conversation.
"The fleet stands ready," he said, switching back to Manissiat. "You, Pathfinder, will take us on an in-system jump to the planet."
General Arias Nakir stirred in his seat.
"Someone can do that?"
"The Pathfinder will do it,"
Jixtus said, his tone making it clear that there would be no further argument. His veiled face turned briefly to the Kilgi leader, then back to Kilori.
"Pathfinder."
"Yes, sir,"
Kilori said.
"Shall I send the jump coordinates to your other ships?"
"The fleet will follow in its own time," Jixtus said. "I will first speak alone with the Chiss. I'm curious to see if Thrawn will offer me two alien lives, as you predicted.
Kilori's winglets stiffened. He'd hoped Jixtus had forgotten about that conversation, or at least had put aside the threat he'd appended to Kilori's fumbling theories about Thrawn's strategy.
Yes, sir,
he managed.
In-system jump is ready.
Execute,
Jixtus ordered. Bracing himself, Kilori keyed the helm. A flicker of stars, and the planet's sunrise loomed dark, and all but dead. A fitting backdrop, Kilori thought, as he stared in stunned disbelief at the utter devastation that had now appeared in front of them. Kilori had expected to find Thrawn and his allies ringed by the force the Ascendancy had sent to detain him. The number of vessels was the first surprise, with nearly 30 warships visible, ranging in size from gunboats to the Night Dragon he'd warned Jixtus about. But they weren't in any battle array, nor were they even standing defiantly against Thrawn. They were dead. All of them. Chapter 25. Kilori let his gaze sweep slowly across the scene, winglets undulating in horror and revulsion. The warships were everywhere, some drifting in more or less stable orbits, others in the more extreme hyperbolic paths that would in hours or days end their existence in fiery crashes on the planet's surface. None of them was showing any signs of internal activity. The whetstone sensors indicated that most of their reactors were still providing power, but that power was minimal and slowly fading. Battle debris was scattered everywhere, with some of the larger ships trailing thin tendrils of smoke. One of the gunboats off to the side was slowly turning, the light from the distant sun glinting off torn hull plates, its own trail of smoke long and thick and twisting in a bizarre expanding corkscrew shape that surrounded it. The smoke glistened in the distant sunlight as if it was more of a drifting metal slurry than simple vaporized debris. And he wondered briefly, what kind of weapon could have generated such a cloud? A couple of ships showed spots of flickering flame where broken oxygen lines fed into laser damage. Whatever had happened here, the whetstone must have just missed it.
Move us, Jixtus ordered. I wish to see it all.
Move closer,
Nakir repeated. As if, Kilori thought, the Kilji's orders or presence aboard his ship truly mattered anymore. The thrusters activated, sending the whetstone past the edge into Sunrise's gravity well. All the ships must have likewise been deep in the well, Kilori noted, with a quiet ache, with no hope of escaping into hyperspace. No wonder all of them had died where they stood.
The ships still exude the heat of life,
the vassal at the sensor station said.
The bodies aboard continue to cool.
A few hours at the most, then,
Kilori said. Did that explain what he'd seen while nestled within the Great Presence? Had Pathfinder Sarsh been trying to escape the carnage of battle in a ship whose hyperdrive had first sputtered and then failed completely?
So, Thrawn refused the order to surrender,
Jixtus said, a mix of satisfaction and disappointment in his voice.
I thought he might.
Why would he do such a thing?
Kilori murmured.
He's always considered himself unbeatable, Jixtus said. Now, here, his luck finally drained away.
He gave a sound that was half snort, half chuckle.
And as the ascendancy spirals toward its doom, so these Chiss have engaged and destroyed themselves and each other. Sunrise and its people are ours.
So it would seem,
Kilori said, his eyes still fixed on the wreckage. Jixtus could invoke comparisons all he wanted, but to Kilori, the whole disaster was still inexplicable. How could such a thing have happened? A glint caught his eye. A small asteroid in the near distance, drifting just outside the field of wreckage, had reflected a ray of sunlight. There were probably a dozen of the rocky objects out there, he saw now, their sizes ranging from that of gunboats all the way down to that of single-person escape pods. Probably strays from the asteroid cluster the sensors showed in the near distance behind them. As if nature itself had observed the battle and sent representatives for a closer look. He frowned, throwing a longer look at the cluster. A tight-knit group of rocks like that, within sensor and comm range of the planet, and close enough for a quick in-system jump, would offer perfect cover for an observation post. And in fact, now that he was focusing on it, he thought he could see some faint glints of reflected light. But the whetstone sensors showed no sign of movement or energy readings out there. If someone had indeed set up such a post, the battle had apparently ranged far enough to take it out as well, leaving only dead ships or scrap behind. Or else the glints were coming from metal deposits in the asteroids, and all the rest was Kilori's own nervous imagination.
There,
Jixtus said, jabbing a finger toward the viewport.
Those two ships close into the planet. Did I just see laser fire between them?
Kilori shifted his attention from the asteroids and the wrecked ships and peered in the direction Jixtus was pointing. Beyond the corkscrewing smoke trail were two ships drifting along together, neither of them under power. Both were ships he recognized, the Chiss Night Dragon Vigilant and Wingali Foar Mar-Oxa's stolen Nicardoon blockade frigate, Aelos. And as Kilori watched, feeling an odd sadness, a small, useless flicker of laser fire did indeed flash between the two derelicts.
Take us over to them, vassal,
Jixtus ordered, shifting the jabbing finger to the Kilji at the helm.
And you, vassal,
he pointed at the comm station.
Send a broadcast signal calling for survivors.
Do as he orders,
Nakir muttered.
A signal is already coming in,
the calm vassal said, keying his board.
Is that you, General Arias Nakir?
A voice came tentatively from the speaker, the words half buried in the crackle of a damaged transmitter.
It is,
Nakir confirmed.
Is that you, Senior Captain Thrawn?
It is I,
the other said. And this time, Kilori was able to recognize his voice. But it was no longer the voice of calm confidence and borderline arrogance that had always been the mark of this particular blue skin. Thrawn's voice was wounded, dismayed, lost. His schemes, his plans, his self-assurance, all had come to nothing. Earlier, Kilori had wondered if Thrawn and the Chiss would break against the Grisk fleet. Instead, they'd broken against each other.
I'm afraid you've arrived too late to bring the enlightenment you once promised me,
Thrawn said.
Perhaps you will have more success elsewhere. Does Jixis of the Grist still travel with you?
I do,
Jixis spoke up.
Tell me, Thrawn of the Chiss, did you find those prescient cousins of the mages you came here to seek?
I found you, yes,
Thrawn said. Jixis turned toward Kilori, and Kilori could imagine a knowing smile behind the black veil.
Him,
Jixis repeated.
So there was just the one.
There are never more than two,
Thrawn said.
The mages, and the magicine, they're called.
Ah,
Jixis said.
And do you have both of them with you aboard the Aelos?
There was just the barest hesitation.
No,
Thrawn said.
They're on the surface, traveling to a place of safety.
I see,
Jixis said. There was a dull thunk somewhere beneath them as the whetstone bumped against a small piece of floating debris.
Safety from me, or safety from you?
Why would they need safety from me?
Of course, Jixis said. Let me tell you what I think. I think you lied to Kilori of Wanduolon, and somehow managed to pass that same lie to the Grisk observers left behind on Sunrise. I think there are more than one of these major scenes. I think you've already found all of them. I think they're currently huddled together with you aboard your wrecked ship.
My ship is hardly wrecked,
Thrawn said.
Our repairs are already underway.
Efforts that will soon come to naught,
Jixis said calmly.
You have no electrostatic barrier, no lasers to speak of, and insufficient power to activate either to any real effect. A single laser salvo, a single missile, and you will be just more battle debris. I notice our sensors suggest there may yet be a great many survivors aboard the Vigilant.
Your quarrel is with me, Jixis of Gris,
Thrawn said, a bit of life coming back into his voice.
Leave the dead and dying, no.
If they are truly dying, would it not be merciful to ease their suffering?
Jixis asked.
But you're right. You are the one I came to Sunrise to destroy. I have only pity and contempt for those who unwisely chose to fall at your side. I therefore offer a trade. Their lives for the alien major scenes aboard your ship.
There was another pause, a longer one this time.
I can't give them to you,
Thrawn said.
They're too young, too delicate. Their lives are too precious.
I would treat them well,
Jixis assured him.
They would be as honored guests among the Grisks.
And guests is all they would ever be,
Thrawn said bluntly.
I doubt you would be willing to invest the time and patience necessary to properly train them.
Jixis gave a contemptuous snort.
Time and patience, you say? Truly, you underestimate me. I put a great deal of time and patience into you and your ascendancy already. A little more invested to obtain such a prize would hardly be a loss.
What time?
Thrawn scoffed. His voice was a little stronger, as if he'd realized the end was near and had decided to face his final enemy with dignity.
You've just barely arrived in this region of space. I tell you that years of patience would be required to train the major seeds.
I am hardly new to this war, Thrawn of the Chiss,
Jixtus retorted stiffly.
Years of patience, you say? That is indeed what was required to train and nurture General Yev the Benevolent and his Nikar Dun. Guiding him and pointing him toward his conquest took even more patience.
I fail to see what patience was necessary,
Thrawn said.
You've simply lashed out at everyone in his power. That hardly required guidance.
If you believe that, you're less perceptive than I realized,
Jixtus said.
The order and locations of his conquests and alliances needed to be carefully mapped out if we were to create the necessary encirclement of your Chiss ascendancy.
By conquest, you refer to the Vakonban and Garwian unity.
There was no need for Yiv to conquer the Garwians,
Jixtus said.
All that was needed to keep them quiet and cowering was to create a treaty between Yiv and their Leo Aowen enemies.
So you conquered some and intimidated others,
Thrawn said.
What of the nations you drained of their resources and then crushed underfoot?
What of them?
Jixtus asked, his black robe shifting as he gave a small shrug.
They were of no value, except as practice for Yiv's soldiers. A few others, like the world currently below us, had certain specific resources, but weren't worth the effort of conquering.
So those were the ones the Ekbui were sent to destroy from within?
Some of them were,
Jixtus said.
The Ekbui are quite good at such things. The one named Hapleaf in particular was one of the best. The Chiss will pay dearly for depriving me of his future services.
His service against whom?
Thrawn countered.
You've already destroyed everything in the region.
Not everything,
Jixtus said.
Perhaps I'll send the Ekbui against your Puckian friends, or against the Vax and Garwians.
Trying to make their words like Sunrise would be a mistake,
Thrawn warned.
Possibly,
Jixtus said.
True. Sunrise was an entertaining exercise in subjugation and destruction. But as you can see, it was quite costly. Perhaps I'll simply enslave the Garwians and Vax, lest I discover too late their worlds also have hidden resources. Ekbui persuasion isn't limited to destruction, after all.
Indeed,
Thrawn said.
It was quite clever, using the knives the Ekbui confiscated from Sunrise to corrupt your targeted Chiss officials. Fortunately, we were able to thwart that ploy.
Only temporarily, Jixtus
said.
Our latest effort will soon bear the same bitter fruit you see below you.
Perhaps,
Thrawn said.
Still, you made a serious error when you sent Yiv against the Batatians.
Why do you say that?
So you claim that after years of working destruction from the shadows, you finally stepped into the light?
Thrawn said, ignoring Jixtus's question.
You've traveled among the ruling families, offering proof of treachery with one hand and assistance of Grist warships with the other. Only it was all lies. There was no deceit among the families, and your warships were never going to be given to any chief's family. They would always remain under your sole control.
Would you hand over warships to beings already marked for destruction?
Jixtus countered.
If you had any warships left to hand over, that is.
Point taken.
Thrawn said heavily.
But surely you couldn't have known this would be the view you would face upon your arrival. Did you truly think it would be safe for you to come alone, without your fleet to support you?
Of course not,
Jixtus said, an edge of malicious satisfaction in his voice.
If you can still see, look outward and witness the arrival of your final doom.
And then, sweeping into view directly behind the whetstone, the 15 massive ships of Jixtus's fleet arrived.
Do you see them, Thrawn?
Jixtus asked.
Do you see them?
I see them,
Thrawn confirmed.
An impressive array. I believe introductions are in order.
You wish to know the names of the warships that will slaughter you and finish the destruction of your pitiful force?
Jixtus asked.
Why?
Why not?
Thrawn replied.
Are you so desirous of personal glory that you would deny your force captains their share of it?
Jixtus snorted.
Do you think to drive a wedge between my captains and me? You are indeed foolish. But no matter. The largest ship, the one now coming up along the starboard side of this pathetic little Kilgi war cruiser, is my flagship, the Fate Spinner.
Impressive,
Thrawn said. He was hiding his apprehension well, Kilori thought, but the sight of the massive Grisk warship had to be digging a claw into his heart.
It is indeed,
Jixtus agreed.
It's a Shatter-class war, Master. The greatest class of warship in the Grisk Armada. Flanking it on port side, starboard, and dorsal are my three Stonecrusher-class war masters, Emry, Armageddon, and Skysweep. Screening the core ships are my 11 Prism-class battle chiefs. I'd offer them names, but there's no point in overburdening you with details when your time is so short.
15 vessels in all,
Thrawn said.
I know that there are more here than you offered the Clark Patriarch.
Of course,
Jixtus said.
A moment, if you please.
He rattled off a few sentences in the Grisk language, and Kilori saw the battle formation slowly break apart as the warships headed toward different sections of the battleground.
I'm sending them off to search for the ships most likely to hold survivors,
he said, switching back to Manisiat.
You recall, I offered to trade Chiss lives for the major scenes.
You spoke only of the Vigilant.
I'm adding further inducements,
Jixtus said.
And you're correct about the numbers. Patriarch Rivlex wasn't the only arrogant fool who accepted my warships. The Chaff and Ufsar patriarchs were also eager to add Grisk power to their fleets. I, for my part, was happy to have safe harbors where my ships would have easy access to supplies and fuel.
Yet you've now brought them all here,
Thrawn said.
What if the patriarchs noticed their departure? Will they not wonder whether your promise of control was a lie?
Is that where your final hope rests?
Jixtus asked.
but the patriarchs will see their folly and reconsider their agreements with me.
He gave a contemptuous snort.
No, Thrawn. As you once thought to utilize the Matrix Center people to see your battles laid out before you, so too is this final expectation also in vain. My warships will return to their nests once we finish here, long before the Patriarchs can become concerned, probably before they even notice their absence.
It would have been wiser to leave one or two behind to calm any concerns,
Thrawn suggested.
As I see now, I could have.
Chixtus agreed.
But I came to Sunrise expecting to fight a major battle. I didn't expect to find that you'd done my job for me.
So this is your entire fleet?
Kilori's winglets twitched. That was an odd question. Jixtus apparently thought so too.
Why do you ask?
I offer a trade,
Thrawn said.
Answer my question, and I'll tell you why it was a mistake to send the Nicardoon against the Batarkis.
Kilori looked sideways at Jixtus. The Grisk was sitting motionless. His veiled face turned toward the viewport and the two damaged ships the Whetstone was making its way toward.
Very well. I'll play your game,
he said.
I really don't care about Yiv or his failures. Certainly not now that he's gone. But I'll admit to some curiosity. Yes, this is my entire fleet. Not the entirety of Grisk forces, certainly. Our armada would fill the Chila sky. These are merely what I deemed necessary for the destruction of the Chiss Ascendancy.
Mine is the warship we've already taken from you.
Jixtus made a rumbling sound in the back of his throat.
The Hoop Breaker. Yes. The Fate Spinner's sister's ship. Like Hapleaf's death, be assured that the loss of that ship will be held for full payment against you.
I apologize for bringing up a painful subject,
Thrawn said.
I merely mention it because the record of its destruction will provide detailed instruction to the Chiss Defense Force as to how to face your warships and destroy them. You might wish to ponder that before you consider another move against the Ascendancy.
Pondered and dismissed,
Jixtus said contemptuously.
By the time I bring my warships openly into your war, there won't be enough left of your defense force to worry about. Especially not with well over half of the expansionary defense fleet already lying waste here. Explain to me Yiv's mistake.
The mistake was that the Protartists were quite unhappy at his attempt to conquer them. That anger was matched with an equal degree of gratitude for my assistance in breaking the last Nicardoon stranglehold.
And so,
they were happy to do me a favor,
Thrawn said.
Are you still here, General Arias Nakir?
I am!
Nakir spoke up.
You sent your cure hold against several of the small nations to the south, southeast of the Ascendancy,
Thrawn said.
Unfortunately for them, that also put them to the north and northwest of the Batarkis Hive Form. Having a large military force operating that close to their borders was seen unacceptable.
What are you saying?
Nakir demanded.
I'm saying There's your keelboard, he's gone.
Thrawn said.
A multi-pronged Patarsis attack fleet engaged and destroyed it. All of it. The worlds and peoples on whom you hoped to force your enlightenment have been set free.
No!
Nakir insisted.
You lie! The Illumin Keelhoard is mighty and unshakable!
Unfortunately, it also has several weaknesses, both in design and in combat doctrine,
Thrawn said.
Flaws that were easily gleaned from the battle data we retrieved from your picket cruiser, Hammer. That information was, of course, shared with the Patarsis prior to their return.
Kilori looked sideways at Nakir, cringing as the Kilji's skin roiled across his body like waves on an agitated sea. Jixtus, in contrast, was utterly unmoving, his face turned toward the General Arias. And then, abruptly, Nakir leapt to his feet.
You did this!
He snarled, jabbing a finger at Jixtus.
Your arrogance, your refusal to accept the Kilji Illumin as true allies, your failure to provide adequate support for our conquest of enlightenment!
Without a word, Jixtus pulled a small hand weapon from inside his cloak and fired a single shot. Kilori's winglets spasmed with shock as Nakir jerked and collapsed to the deck, his skin finally and forever going still.
Sir!
Kilori gasped.
Calm yourself, Pathfinder,
Jixtus said.
If the Keelhoard is gone, the General Arias is of no further use to me.
He looked around the bridge, his covered face turning to each of the Kilgis in turn. Then, apparently satisfied that there would be no further resistance, he returned the weapon to its hidden holster.
And now, Thrawn of the Chiss, are you ready to give me the major scenes?
One final comment before I answer,
Thrawn said.
I wish to remind you that the data from the Hammer's recent confrontation here at Sunrise, along with our observations during our own battles with your warships, have likewise highlighted several weaknesses in Grisk combat abilities and tactics. You would be wise to take that into account before you answer my question.
And what question would that be?
Jixtus asked.
The most critical one of all,
Thrawn said.
Are you ready to surrender? Are you ready to surrender?
For a few seconds, the calm was silent. Arlani's eyes flickered around the Vigilance Bridge, looking at the dark displays and the lines of red status lights, wondering if Jixtus's mouth was hanging open in surprise at the sheer brashness of Thrawn's question. Wondering, too, what Grisks looked like, so she'd know if an open-mouthed stare was even physically possible for them. She gazed out the viewport, her brief contemplation of Grisk physiology disappearing into more pressing issues. The Grisk warships, currently spreading out among the drifting debris field, were big and ugly, bringing back unpleasant memories of the one the Vigilant had tangled with over this same planet. True, only the Fate Spinner was as big as the warship she and Zynda had eventually taken down. But at the time of its final defeat, the Hopebreaker had already taken serious damage from its earlier encounter with Zynda and Thrawn. The Fate Spinner, in contrast, looked to be in pristine condition. As for the other ships of Jixtus's fleet, the Sky Sweep, Armageddon, and Emry were at least somewhat smaller than the Vigilant. Unfortunately, they were still larger than the Springhawk and Greyshrike. The 11 Battle Chiefs were only a little smaller than the Chiss heavy cruisers, and larger than the light cruisers and patrol cruisers that the Council and Bakeef had sent.
No matter how this worked out, it was likely to be bloody. And in the end,
the whole battle plan rested on the alien device hidden in the Pakian gunboat, currently twisting out its corkscrew of black metallic smoke.
A device that might or might not perform the way Thrawn claimed it would. But these were the cards they were holding. Arulani's job was to play them as cleanly and as cunningly as possible.
Are you ready to surrender?
Someone across the Greyshrike's bridge let out a small half-chuckle. Zyenda's first impulse was to warn against unprofessional outbursts. Her second was to recognize that releasing a little tension before battle was not just understandable, but beneficial. She shifted her attention from the blank tactical display she'd been contemplating to the viewport. In the distance, she could see the spiraling smoke that marked the Pakian gunboat where the alien device was being held in readiness. And she wondered distantly if Mid-Captain Apros, standing watch over that device, was chuckling away any of his own tension. She hadn't wanted him to take that duty. In fact, she'd fought strenuously against it, arguing that her first officer's place was aboard his own ship. But Thrawn and Arulani had insisted in turn that the device couldn't be simply left in Pakian hands, and that a core group of Chiss needed to be aboard to operate it. Apros had volunteered to command the contingent. Thrawn had accepted, and the discussion had been over. It had been a bold and honorable offer, Zyenda knew, given that if Apros hadn't volunteered, someone else would have had to take his place. It demonstrated the kind of courage and commitment that was supposed to be the hallmark of the expansionary defense fleet. But lurking in the back of her mind was the quiet conversation the two of them had had on the Greyshrike's bridge. The discussion of family pride and personal recognition. Had Apros asked to be caretaker of the alien device out of a desire to be remembered by his family and the Ascendancy? Zyenda hoped not. That wasn't how decisions were supposed to be made. But there was no going back now. All she could do was fight the enemy to the best of her strength and ability, and leave the rest to the universe and warrior's fortune. And she would also make sure that whatever happened, Mid-Captain Chapro Strobe would be remembered.
Are you ready to surrender?
For a long moment, Jixtus didn't speak.
Kilori sent a furtive look at him, wondering what was going on behind the veil.
Whether the Grisk was surprised, amused, or outraged. Was Thrawn trying to get himself summarily killed?
Kilori's winglets flattened. Of course he was.
The Magus and the Magusines were aboard the Aelos with him, and a quick, violent death at Jixtus's hand would rob the Grisk of his prizes. But Jixtus wouldn't fall for it. He would hold back against his anger until he was able to board the Aelos and either confirm the Magusine's existence or establish that they weren't there. Only when that task had been completed would Jixtus allow himself the pleasure of watching Thrawn die. And then, as Jixtus presumably was still choosing his response, the Whetstone's bridge speaker gave a clear, bright tone as a general broadcast from the Aelos came over the comm. Kilori twitched, his winglets twitching along with him. An alarm? A warning? A signal? And as he gazed out the viewport in horror, the dead Chiss fleet came back to life. The drifting ships seemed to gather themselves together, their running lights reappearing, their slow, random rotation ceasing as they stabilized and rotated their weapons clusters toward the Grisk ships. Those surrounded by battle debris shook themselves free of the floating clouds, the tendrils of smoke or liquid ceasing their flow, the lingering fires vanishing. On the whetstone's displays, Kilori saw the reactor power readings of the nearest ships surge smoothly upward. Laser capacitors ran to full charge. Electrostatic barriers winked into existence along Nyx alloy hulls. Barely 15 seconds after the tone sounded, the Chiss fleet was ready. And with the Grisk warships having split up their battle formation, each now found itself in the center of a group of enemies.
Where are Jixis?
Thrawn asked, his voice no longer tentative and broken.
I offer you one final chance.
There was no response. Kilori tore his eyes away from the awakening enemy and looked at the command chair. It was empty.
Jixis?
Kilori looked around frantically, turning his head to the starboard side of the bridge, just in time to see the escape pod hatch on that side slam shut.
Jixis!
Too late. There was the muffled sound of the ejection thrusters, and Jixis was gone. Kilori looked around, his winglets quivering. When Nakir had died, the vassals had all hunched over in their seats, remembering or mourning, or perhaps gone catatonic. They were all still in that posture, apparently oblivious to both Jixis's exit and the threat rapidly forming in front of them. Their enlightened master was dead, and they had given up hope. And Kilori was trapped in here with them.
Everyone stay sharp, Samakra warned, watching with grim satisfaction as the Springhawk came to full battle readiness. He and the others had practiced this crash ramp up twice a day since the arrival of the rest of the expansionary defense fleet ships, supposedly at sunrise to arrest Thrawn, actually under Bakeef's private order to join his forces and place themselves under his command. There'd been some grumbling about the whole mutual destruction scenario Thrawn had proposed, Samakro knew. But even those who disagreed with him could see now that a field of supposedly wrecked warships had been the perfect way to split Jixis's warships apart and draw them into close combat range. Though if any of the captains had known the size of the Grisk ships, they might have voiced even stronger reservations. But for the moment, at least,